Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019. This is News Talk STL.
Well, good morning again. Welcome to the program. If you're just joining us, if you aren't, well, that's okay. You missed a pretty active hour, but you can catch the podcast later on. Jerome will put that up. Because Jerome was schooled somehow, parented somehow learned that responsibility yields great reputation. It's fulfilling to do the right thing, to have a strong work ethic, to respond to, you know, requests from folks you work with and to offer and contribute to society rather than do what increasing number of our children are doing, our kids are doing, and that is to be dependent, be victims, be angry, act out when you don't get your way. And we talked about it a little last week in terms of some of the criminality we're seeing among Americans' youth and older people. Youth grow into older people, and criminal youth seem to grow into criminals, older people too. And Jerome shared with me some stories during our pre-production meeting about things that he'd been through. So Jerome, I really hope you'll relate just a couple of the stories. You grew up in a sharp elbows, rumble tumble area in Joliet, Illinois. Tell a couple of those stories, and then we want to go into maybe looking at some root causes of why some young people go north and some go south. You've clearly gone north. Let's tell the story.
Yeah, so just to summarize, for anybody that missed last week's hours, so I've been shot at twice growing up in Joliet, Illinois. I grew up in an area that was ripe for gang violence, ripe for drug activity. We actually had a house behind us that got the SWAT team or DEA or whoever is involved come and raid them for drugs. And I have, you know, I've had friends get murdered from either gang violence or because of drug addiction, something goes wrong. I've had friends overdose, suicides, all that kind of stuff. And so the area that I grew up in, actually, if you look back in the 70s and 80s, used to be a very affluent, very safe, very nice area. And just because of the lack of morals and the lack of parenting, I would say, is one of the biggest causes, caused everything to go down from there. And so when we were talking about criminality and why certain people go certain directions, I would be lying if I said that for a part of my life I didn't sort of fall into that. Now, nothing super crazy, nothing super illegal, but I was associated with it. You know, I was around that. My friends growing up, yeah, a lot of them were drug dealers or gangbangers because that's the people I had to choose from. You know, there was no option to go to a different school when all the schools are failing by every metric when it comes to safety, no child left behind metrics, all that kind of stuff. So I got very invested in learning at a young age, and this is where I think my path, you know, when you were saying north versus south, is I was always a curious person, and I wanted to learn more. You know, I wanted to understand more about my community and why I was going through certain things. So I was raised by a single mother, and what we see, and I have the statistic right here, 75% of juvenile delinquents, people that are incarcerated in juvenile hall, 75% of them come from fatherless homes. Of all people that are currently arrested, 65% come from fatherless homes. So by every metric, I should be another statistic. But my thing was, growing up, I was always more afraid, and this might sound counterintuitive, I was always more afraid of upsetting my mom than I was being in trouble with the cops.
Ah.
And that's a big thing, is that it wasn't necessarily that I feared law enforcement. I feared making my grandparents look bad. I feared, you know, making my mom look bad. On top of that, I was in sports a lot. So when you have a coach, you have somebody that's maybe not a fully parental figure, but so definitely an authoritative figure that you need to learn to respect and that you need to learn to listen to, and that can issue out punishments. So the punishments for us were not, you know, getting the belt or, you know, going into timeout or grounded. The punishment was you're going to run laps until you throw up sometimes. You're going to, if you have an issue with your teammate, they used to make us hold hands and skip around the entire football area. And that was the way that it's like, if you guys are not going to get along, we're going to make you get along. And, you know, your teammates, you guys need to learn to respect each other. You need to value each other. So I think that that's pretty good indicator. And then with my grandparents, even, we did a lot of volunteer work through the church that we were at. So we would go to a place called Daybreak Homeless Shelter, and we would help pass out meals to people. We would go out to Sunny Hill Nursing Homes, and we'd help people that had dementia, Alzheimer's, or maybe that they're just so old and that they couldn't take care of themselves. And so we would do stuff like that. We'd do food drives for people in the community. I was part of, it was called Love Out Loud, and we would go up to Michigan and sometimes Wisconsin, and we'd help repair homes for underprivileged people through the church that I was at. So when we're thinking about why is it that some of my friends are currently in jail right now, or they're currently, no longer with us right now, and what could have been done differently? Well, I only knew a few people that actually had fathers in their home, and even with their moms may have loved them, but they were out working. They were out doing something. So we were unsupervised. And as long as you didn't get caught by the cops, I mean, you could do pretty much whatever. When there's so much crime in an area, and there are violent people in an area, the cops are not going to sit there and go after teenagers that are up to no good when there are actual, drug rings going on, or prostitution rings, or, murderers out there.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something. You said that the neighborhood was at one time, it sounds like sort of an idyllic neighborhood with sort of the traditional family setup, and there wasn't criminality and drugs and gangs. Did it start to deteriorate in association with, the things that seem to be correlated with the deterioration of the nuclear family? And you were lucky. Maybe your mom had a different set of resources, with your grandparents serving in some kind of an adjunct parenting, support system, right? That's what I'm hearing. Maybe you had a coach who may have been a surrogate dad in a sense. You know what I mean? By dads put down the hammers, mom endorsed that as well. But the two cultural trends that seem to have accompanied the deterioration of neighborhoods, our cities, and our families are the rise of the welfare system, which enables or can enable abandonment of the family by the dad. I mean, that's typically what happens. So women then naturally will look for social and financial support. Where are you going to get it? Well, through your church, through your government, through your community, your family, right? Okay. Well, the family runs out of resources eventually to support the mom trying to take care of the kids. Faith has fallen. And whether you currently are, or many young people start out in their church and they're of faith and then they aren't, that's of lesser importance. But I mean, it's important to me and to many of us that people would gradually come back, as many young people do. Your church, when you're young, you tend to fall away. And then when you realize that human beings can't solve human earthly problems, only God does that, most people come around at some point in their life. But the one thing that, I mean, almost everyone I know that is churched and that has a faith background, they have some curbs, some guidelines to live by. I mean, at least they know about the Ten Commandments. At least they're aware. They have some boundaries on their behavior. Whereas, as we've seen the deterioration of faith in this country, I think that is, again, associated with the onslaught of wanton acting out and so forth. Do you think that welfare on the one hand, the rise of the socialist state, and the decline and the disrespect for faith traditions in our country have anything to do with what you experienced and what our communities are going through?
Yeah, absolutely, to some degree. So what I found out for why Joliet kind of started going downhill was there's a program to try to alleviate some of the gang violence in Chicago because of how close Joliet is to Chicago. So they opened up a program where if you were willing to leave behind gang life, or you were trying to escape from gang life or an environment that was gang heavy, then they would help you get assisted living housing and they would help you rebuild your life in Joliet. Now, the oversight there is sort of obvious to me, but maybe not to others, is when you take people that are familiar with gang life and know how to run drugs and know how to run guns, and you put them in an area where there's practically zero gangs, there's no opposition, that becomes a prime market. So wow. I wouldn't say directly that welfare on its own caused that, but I think that, like you were saying, when it comes to enabling certain lifestyles. And I certainly knew people that would lie about having a disability, lie about something to get medicated, and they wouldn't even take the medication. They would go and they would sell it to college kids, Yeah.
I was making an indirect inference in that you mentioned the importance of your mom making you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your grandparents reinforcing that. Okay. Well, if your mom is can basically, well, you were lucky. Yes. Apparently there were many moms out there who weren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
There were other, you know, family situations that didn't support accountability and help expose you to the faith traditions, where faith gives you hope in the valley. I mean, that's what faith does. And if you didn't have that exposure, maybe everything would have been negative and you would have been a victim like others and figured, hey, what do I have to lose? That may be, maybe that plays into criminality. But I guess my point is, if it's too easy for kids to be latchkey kids because it's too easy for dads to leave the house,
mm-hmm.
and therefore moms, a certain percentage of moms, just no matter what they want to do, aren't going to be able to. Maybe the grandparents aren't around, they're deceased, maybe they're in jail, I don't know. But I think the welfare system tends to give money without morals, money without morals, right? Because government social workers can't preach the good book. They can't give you any moral instruction. Their idea is just to make sure you get the money because they've got a caseload that's incredible. What about these programs? Are these programs, it seems like there's all kinds of programs, inner city programs, after school, but the programs don't seem to be taking hold. Is that because when kids return to their home, there's intimidation from the gangs that, hey, you better, if you continue trying to, quote, get out, we're going to make you pay. I mean, is there just basically threats and bullying that goes on?
Yeah, so we had a lot of after school programs, and there would be kids that would only show up just so that they could try to recruit, or they could, you know, deal stuff without the teachers. Because, again, going back to being a latchkey kind of child, you know, the schools are not taught to punish you anymore. They're taught to be your friend. Now, when you get out of that environment and you go back home, at least in my area, it wasn't so much that you couldn't just leave. I mean, you also had to have the money to go and uproot your life and go somewhere. And a lot of people can afford to do that, especially if they have children. But yeah, the idea is that if they suspect you of cooperating with police officers or being an informant, you know, even if you aren't, if they suspect that you're snooping around, that you might be a danger to whatever illegal stuff they're doing, retaliation can happen. And I've had, you know, that happen to me. Luckily, it wasn't, you know, murder or being, you know, killed or nothing like that. But I have had people in my neighborhoods that saw me hanging out with somebody that they knew was like a rival gang member. And I had no idea that this guy was even gang affiliated. He was just really nice to me. We kind of just hung out. Nothing illegal that was going on with us. But it's that suspicion of, oh, you might be my opposition. And so I think it's a two-part thing. You know, if you're not afraid of the legal system, like I really wasn't afraid of cops growing up because I knew how to behave in public. But it's that idea that if your parents are not going to be there to, because my mom was not a weak parent. She was not what we call the gentle parents of today. You know, she wasn't abusive physically per se, but she definitely, there's an expectation. And if you didn't meet the expectation, you got punished, you know, and that's just the way it was. And so you'd go to school and these teachers, especially if you don't have, you know, parents in the home that are going to instill some sort of discipline or respect for authority, you're not going to get that from the schools. And even with my younger brother, you know, they're taught to be your friends. They're taught to give you a lot of chances. Now we're seeing it with the courts as well. So even if you have a two-parent household, you know, with what we see with these TikTok trends, you know, there's a whole trend where people are going around kicking in the front door of people's houses and recording it for fun. Or like the Kia boys, who are very active around St. Louis, and they actually stole my girlfriend's car a few months ago. They go on TikTok and they found out an exploit. They steal a car and then they post videos on TikTok of them joyriding it and trashing the car. And then most of the time, like, they still don't know who stole my girlfriend's car. They found the car abandoned in Fenton, Missouri, on the side of a highway. And the cops literally thought that it was a missing persons case because the car was torn up. We were asleep. We didn't even know. And so they called her mom, and her mom called us freaking out, thinking that her daughter had been missing or killed. And we didn't even know the car was gone until the cops, you know, let us know. Like, they stopped by our place. And to this day, they have no idea who took the car. So, and it was,
oh my God.
It was a Kia boys. Like they told us that that's been going on all over St. Louis, all over Missouri, parts of Illinois.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be necessarily that these are violent criminals doing this. And to address one of the points of one of our, the stream commenters, even with drug charges, you know, you have people that are in jail. 40% of people in jail right now are there on drug charges, and rather than getting them rehabilitative care and addressing why do you feel the need to use drugs, why are you destroying yourself with drugs, what they're doing is that they're putting them in an area where it's a prime market. People in prisons love drugs. Even the head of the DEA said, we cannot keep drugs out of maximum security prisons. How are we supposed to keep them off the streets? So I think that the way that we think about this is that there needs to be more emphasis, not on abusing or harming, but on disciplining and instilling the understanding that there needs to be love and respect for each other as Americans towards each other. But also we need a serious overhaul in the way that schools, because children spend most of their day with their teachers and their principals.
Yeah.
And the courts, well, and the, you know, once you're actually caught, you know, are you going to be punished? Are you a bad guy that needs to learn what it feels like to have something bad done to you? Or are you somebody that is so mentally ill or so sad with life or just has given up hope and you're turning to substances that are destroying you and now you need to be rehabilitated or you need somebody to help you realize how to get away from that lifestyle? That's kind of what I struggle with when I think about these issues.
Well, I think this has been fascinating. And I think every week, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about culture, its intersection with families, the deterioration thereof, criminality, and if there's some connections and dots to be connected. Maybe in the upcoming segment, we'll ask Todd Showalter, whose parents were probably descended from, I don't know, maybe we'll have to do a 23andMe. Maybe Todd came from like Walt Disney on the one hand, and I don't know, Dave Chappelle on the other hand. I don't know. I mean, the guy has a brilliant, creative, and funny mind. And Todd Showalter, of course, who you hear here on News Talk STL, is America's conservative cartoonist. He joins us in the next segment. Later on, we talk about America building a Gaza floating pier. What's that all about? With Rachel Ehrenfeld. And then Phil Kirpin as well, checking on the State of the Union and a fact check on that. And old Virginia Cruda, don't forget her at 7:45. Lots more coming up on the program. Stay tuned.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us. Means a lot that you tune in and to the show. I hope you'll tune in to Todd Showalter's show every Saturday evening here from 5 to 6. He joins us now. Todd, welcome to the program.
How are we doing?
We have a lot to talk about, but we've been talking about criminality and what makes kids turn into criminals. In fact, what makes kids turn into low-level, you know, steal some gum at the checkout counter, and then they turn into people that dismember bodies and so forth, like we've read about with Sheldon Johnson nationally. And then we hear this story about the Oklahoma school, where some crazy things were going on. Listen to Jerome's hit on this.
You felt like more like hazing in a way, because if you didn't have money to get out of it, like you were being forced to do it.
Students claim those with money to buy out of dares had the upper hand.
Most students can't afford that, especially the lower income. So it was definitely more of like, I think, a bullying. I think they were targeting certain students.
Okay, so what... You've heard about it, Todd. I'm expecting a cartoon to appear on StudioTodd.com or NewsTalkSTL.com shortly. Sure. About foot licking, sharing spit in an Oklahoma school. What's going on, brother?
Oh, it's all crazy. It's totally crazy. And, you know, it's like, well, to go back to what Jerome was saying about father figures, that's a huge thing. I mean, I actually did. I coached football. And it was funny because you had some of these kids that would come in that were just derelicts. And they were no discipline whatsoever. And they were the ones that were eventually the most coachable because, you know, I mean, they wanted a father figure. And so, I mean, they cling to that when you gave them some discipline. And I always made it a point that, you know, along with teaching like, you know, a sweep or like, you know, flea flicker or whatnot, one of the biggest plays I would teach them was not to dismember bodies and put heads in the refrigerator. So they, I think to this day, none of my kids that I coached ever have done something so horrible like that. So, I just wanted to kind of, you know, let Jerome know that, you know, I do bring that.
Well, maybe Yeah, maybe the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are looking for a new offensive coordinator. Who knows? Maybe that would be a good thing. But I guarantee you, though,
Mahomes will never put a head in the refrigerator if I coach him. Okay.
No. But you know, it's unfathomable to me how in 2024, apparently this has been going on for years at this school. And now they're reporting that in other adjacent schools, where are the parents' engagement with their children's education? My folks were intimately engaged with, like, every night. Did you do your homework? I know my wife, we dated start in high school. And boy, her dad was working with her on homework every night. That was just an expectation in the homes that I grew up in the Lindbergh School District. That was an expectation. It seems to have evaporated, Todd.
Oh, it totally has. And you basically have lazy parents now, is what it is. Because the big parent now are the cell phones. You know, I mean, just these kids. I mean, this whole generation. I think chiropractors, even though I know you're an MD, but I mean, everybody walking down with their heads bent over and their necks all out of joint, looking at their phone all day long. I think it's either going to be a great industry for chiropractors or massage therapists, because nobody's going to be able to hold their head up pretty soon. And those are the parenting. I mean, the phones have become the parents, because it's just easier. And so you've got these kids growing up on TikTok and all this ridiculous, you know, Chinese-owned technology. And that's what they're learning. So, yeah, you're right. They're sucking on feet, you know, putting heads in the refrigerator. Well, maybe not that. But, you know, doing all these eating Tide Pods, doing all these stupid, ridiculous things. Because the parents are like, oh, have you seen Jimmy? I said, oh, do we have a Jimmy? Yeah, I think he was born 3 years ago. Oh, he's on his phone. I mean, and so that's what they're doing. And it's just pure laziness. And you've got to, in my opinion, you've got to be that authoritarian figure. Because, you know, I got to tell you, I grew up, my father, he graduated first at the Naval Academy, okay? And then I come along, you know, he's like, oh, what happened here? Is he my kid? And I got to tell you, it was like, you know, always discipline. Are you doing your homework? Are you doing this? And when when I didn't get the grades my dad got, I had to become a cartoonist. So that was my story. But at least, you know, it worked out. And I wasn't dismembering bodies and putting heads in a refrigerator. So, I mean, you need that authoritarian figure. And I'm sorry, Karine, I've got so much coffee in me right now. I'll be quiet.
Well, no, look, you make a really critical point. Jerome made the same point. And it was your dad set an example. I'm sure your mom, too.
Oh, yeah.
That
sure.
There was an expectation of performance and some kind of guardrails on your behavior. You channeled it in a very creative sense. And folks, he won't tell you, but I will, having been a musician for the first, 35 years of my life. Well, not since birth, but I mean, from age 15 to 35 or 40, I was a musician. And you're a creative guy in the arts. You're on the radio now. There's a creativity. There's a tremendous amount of self-discipline that's involved in what you do. And somehow the D word, the discipline word, keeps coming up. Self-regulation. These are the kind of things that are seemingly not being instilled through the current schools, who show, oh, you're a victim. You've had trauma. Trauma is life. I'm sorry. Anyone who hasn't had trauma in their life is an AI deepfake, right? And so we're not teaching kids to be resilient. Yeah, we can have empathy and we can say, hey, I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm sorry you got beat up on the playground. But, you know, dust yourself up, you know, pick yourself up and show them that you can make straight A's and become a rocket scientist while they go and get their head beat up and have early Alzheimer's with WWF, whatever. You know, I mean, resilience. And I don't think that's being instilled in us. I know a Navy dad instilled that in you. My dad did. Jerome's mom and grandparents did. That seems to be the secret sauce, no?
Oh, no, I totally agree. In fact, you hit upon it with, like you said, the D word, discipline. And not just discipline, but also self-discipline. I can always tell that with people I work with, whether, you know, usually within about 20, 30 minutes, if they're going to, especially in this industry, they want to get into it or something, you know, whether they're going to make it or not. And that comes down to the self-discipline. And the way you teach self-discipline as a parent, which I don't really think is happening, is that you have to learn what the result is going to be and pay the price of it if you're not disciplined. I mean, so, you know, if there's a cause and an effect. So if I'm not disciplined and I miss a deadline, I don't get paid or I get penalized or something happens or I don't have the job anymore. You know, where now, you know, so that's what happens if I don't discipline myself. I think a lot of kids nowadays, they don't have self-discipline because, well, if I don't do this, you know, maybe somebody's going to bail me out. Or like you said, I'm a victim and it wasn't my fault. So I don't have to worry about it. There's no, you've got to feel that result of not being disciplined to become disciplined. And I think that's part of that's what's missing in parenthood. And there's a lot of parenting right now is we're not allowing kids to fail. And by failure is one of the, I mean, especially I've got so many rejection letters, so many, I mean, to this day I get stuff. Oh, I hate you. Whatever you can imagine what I get. But you know, dealing with rejection is, you know, that's what makes you strong and resilient and tenacious and to keep going. And if you don't have that, you're not going to succeed.
Right.
I mean, that's everything. Discipline is everything.
You're right. I learned early on. I was so lucky, you know, when we started dating, my wife was my first date. And I have to tell you, up until that point, my parents had reminded me that when I was delivered, the doctor didn't know whether to throw away me or the placenta into the bucket. That's how early I was. And so, you know, I learned you got to be resilient. You know, you got to find something there. So, you know, you develop other skills if you got a face for radio, you know. But truly, I mean, you learn to meet challenges, and you only really learn well from your failures. I mean, if you do something right, there's not much learning there. Okay, I'll just keep doing that. But in order to improve and to climb the mountain and get to where you need to be, that's what it takes. All right. Speaking of talent, Todd Showalter. Beautiful things happening on the national scene. Behold, the president of the United States yesterday, after his brilliant, according to CNBC and MSNBC and CNN, fiery speech of the night before. This was Joe Biden yesterday on the campaign trail. Listen.
And I spent over almost 200 hours with the leaders of Europe, the heads of state. I know them all. I've known them well. And guess what? You know what every one of them says to me, virtually, except Orban? I'm serious. As we leave these meetings, well, indirectly, they grab my arm and they pull me aside. I'm serious. They pull me aside and say, you can't win again.
Todd, it looks like the caffeine wore off. Your thoughts on the State of the Union and yesterday's disastrous campaign stop and the upcoming general election. Your turn, buddy.
Well, first of all, I call it the state of the delusional old man. I mean, I didn't even see it as a state of the union because, first of all, it wasn't uniting. It was the most divisional speech I've ever heard. I mean, I think people say it was worst state of the union address. I think it was one of the worst presidential speeches, period. I mean, all he went up there, he got angry like a crazy old guy. Like, you know, get off my yard, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, he divided the country. I mean, the MAGA Republicans and Trump and all that. Oh, we hate you. You're going to do this. So he went out of his way to be the crabby old man to divide America. I thought it was funny that he brought up Ronald Reagan, one of my all time favorite presidents, that, you know, he was the great unifier. And why would you bring this up when you would do a polar opposite and do everything you can to divide the country? I mean, if I ever, I thought I couldn't dislike Joe Biden any more than I did until I watched that speech. And I dislike him more now, probably 20, 30, 40 times more than I did before I watched it. And he's gone. I mean, the guy is just literally gone. And if I were Trump, I mean, apparently they're going to, you know, bait him and try to get him to, you know, have outburst. And, you know, I would just I'd beg the guy, just, I know you want to like leash out, but don't. I would just give Joe, I mean, all the rope he needs to hang himself. And as you saw yesterday, that happened. I mean, Trump doesn't have to do anything. It could be Trump that goes in his basement this campaign, because I think just letting Joe go out there and say all this ridiculous nonsense and make a fool out of himself is all Trump needs to win the election. I mean, the guy is gone. I mean, he's toast. I mean, it's let him make a fool. I mean, it's embarrassing, not just to him, but to the entire country. You know, I'll shut up, but I have friends that I'm working on a project now with a group over in Germany, and we're a laughing stock over there. Okay. I mean, when we get on these Zoom calls It's like nobody wants to talk about the project. They want to talk about what a fool Biden is. So this is a worldwide joke. And just let him out there and flounder and make a fool out of himself. And Trump should have it in the bag.
You know, Todd, it's funny you mentioned Germany. My son works for a Swiss-based company that does big-time printing for the government, actually, in D.C., and he lives in Arlington. He says the same thing. Whether he's in Switzerland and Germany, people scratch their heads and say, what is with you people over there? What in the world are you thinking? But they said the same thing of Donald Trump because of his demeanor. And because, because they're used to namby-pamby foreign policy, and Trump was anything but namby-pamby. So I think that was more of just a hostility to America first principles. But they laugh at Joe in terms of his incompetence.
Well, you know, I want to bring that all the way back to the parenting again, okay? Because you look at Trump, okay, and it's true, okay? I mean, he's outspoken. I mean, he says some things he shouldn't say. He hurts people's feelings and stuff. But that's like a parent or a football coach, especially a football coach. If I want somebody to coach my team, I don't want mamby-pamby nice, let's all get along and kumbaya coach. I want like a Vince Lombardi, you know, knock him down, screaming profanity, whatever. I mean, this guy, if you want to coach it, I don't care how bad and nasty he is, he's going to win the game and take you to the Super Bowl. I don't want some ridiculous, moronic, you know, woke, whatever coach. And that's what we need. That's what the country needs right now. We need a strong, boisterous, outspoken football coach as a president that isn't delusional, isn't, you know, doesn't, you know, say the stupid things the campaign, you know, stops on his way to for ice cream. I mean, we need somebody, and whether you like him or not, he'll get the job done. And right. So just like parenting, you gotta show the tough love, and you gotta speak the truth if you're gonna, you know, raise this country up, just like raising a kid.
And it helps to be able to find your way off the stage too. Todd Showalter, we love when you're with us. We love everything you're drawing and saying on newstalkstl.com. And of course, folks can learn more at studiotodd.com. Todd, thanks so much. Look forward to your show tonight at 5, brother. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll see you at 5.
All right. There he is, Todd Showalter. When we come back, Virginia Cruda joins us. I've got to ask Virginia, is she a fan of Katie Britt? Or not? That's among the things we'll talk about with Virginia coming up. And later, peers in Gaza for humanitarian aid, State of the Union fact check, all of that coming up on The Randy Tobler Show. Please stay tuned.
President, enough is enough. Innocent Americans are dying, and you only have yourself to blame. Fulfill your oath of office. Reverse your policies. End this crisis and stop the suffering.
Well, that was a passionate, kitchen table-oriented Katie Britt response to the State of the Union speech. Virginia Cruda joins us now. The question, Virginia, is was it enough to really propel her into stardom and a rising star category in the GOP, or will she go the way of Sarah Palin? Your turn. Welcome.
I think the answer is probably going to be in the middle, because my reaction to that was not yeah, it was passionate, but what that State of the Union response was, what happens when you give a drama club kid a microphone and say, go. it felt kind of forced in some ways. Like, she was, maybe not forced, rehearsed. It felt like she, where do I emphasize? Which word should I put the, you know, It didn't seem like a gut check response to what was easily the most divisive State of the Union in history. And she could have just said that. But instead, she had all the talking points laid out, and there was obvious pauses for drama, and it felt rehearsed, and that's really the only word I have for it.
Well, let me ask you this. to play devil's advocate, because I, you know, obviously I'm missing that X chromosome that gives wisdom and sanity to the world, called the mind of a woman. And my wife was struck by this. She said, you know, if I'm a 40 something year old mom struggling with paying the bills, ticked off with just the lack of common sense values in my leadership, and I'm getting desperate about whether I can feed my family, put clothes on the kids' back, or my kids going to have to go to some foreign entanglement that we shouldn't be in. She said, that's going to resonate with me. And the passion involved in that is the same passion I might feel. I don't know. I'm just wondering if it might be the kind of a message, maybe a little dialed down, that needs to be part of the Trump campaign going forward to capture, the soccer mom crowd.
I think it already is part of the message. The problem is, because Trump has built himself a reputation, the soccer mom crowd isn't listening to him. If they were listening to him, they'd hear exactly that, because he is saying it. He's just not saying it. It's one of those, you know, you can witness the game, but only if you're willing to sit in the seat in the arena, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. The women that you're talking about, a lot of them have already left. They'd be like, there's nothing here for me. And the fact that he's speaking directly to them is lost on them, because they're not in the seat anymore. But
that's a chilling prognosis, Virginia. That's a chilling prognosis, because
it can't be reached, and I don't think it's everybody. But I think that there are some who are certainly in that position where they're like, I'm not going to hear it because I'm not listening, as opposed to I'm not going to hear it because he's not saying it. Do you see? I'm just making the delineation between those two things.
Well,
not saying that they're.
But Virginia, the data from 2020 seems to indicate that it was the suburban middle, many of them moms and women who are, you know, raising kids with or without dads in the home, who voted for Trump in 16, but because of the lack of civility and the lack of loyalty, and I think that's an important thing to women. They want to feel as though they want to feel secure with their relationships with people. I mean, all people do, but I think women particularly value really trust and relationship. They feel anything but that when they witness the way Donald Trump treats his people, that are, unless they're ultimately and always and unswervingly loyal, he discards them like just trash. And I just, how are we going to get those people back? Because I don't think the base, I don't think the core Trump is enough to push him over the top. I'm wrong.
I mean, the core, well, and just like the core Democrats can't get Biden over the finish line. He needs, it's like we've said it many, many times, independents win elections. You know, it's the middle that decides the election, because you have people on the right who will never vote left, and you have people on the left who will never vote right. The ones who are, you know, the ones who change are the ones in the middle. And those are the only ones that you have a chance of, like, that's who pushes everybody over the line, is the middle. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can you reach both of them? And the reality is, Trump really doesn't have a heavy lift when it comes to reaching the middle, if he would just dial back the stuff that pisses them off. Because Joe Biden's policies are enough to drive anybody to the right. Look at what is the number one issue. And you look at MSNBC, the panel that included Jen Psaki, Joy Reid, Nicole Wallace, Rachel Maddow, and they were mocking Americans in the state of Virginia for saying that immigration was their number one voting issue. They were mocking them 2 weeks after an illegal immigrant had been charged with sexually assaulting a 14-year-old in Virginia. They were mocking him 2 weeks after Laken Riley was killed by an illegal immigrant in Georgia. Like, they're saying, well, it's Virginia, it's not a border state. They're all border states now. Like,
that's right.
between and they would blame it on the red state governors who are busing immigrants you know, into sanctuary cities. But first of all, the sanctuary cities asked for it when they became sanctuary cities. That's number one. But number two, how many flights? I mean, Jen Psaki was at the podium in the White House press room defending the fact that Biden was sending illegal immigrants on flights across the country in the middle of the night. And she said, well, I don't really think of 2 a.m. as the middle of the night. That's how she justified it. She knows that they are all over the United States. And the thing is,
it's crazy.
All you have to do is get up and start talking like that. And I've seen it. I've seen it on Twitter. Well, on X now, multiple times. I've heard it from different pundits, and they're right. No matter how much you hate the media, it's not enough. Because clearly they hate you.
Yeah, right. No doubt about that. No, well, okay, and so here's the thing, though. Are people like Joe Scarborough, who basically says what? You wrote about it. If you can't handle the truth. But Joe Scarborough is not a dummy. I mean, he's not a dummy. Is he just doing this to pander? Is this just performance art? What is it? Where? What screw is loose? What cerebral cortex is missing on the left? You can be a progressive. You can even be a Democrat. You can be a socialist. You can support Bernie Sanders. But how can you support Joe Biden and his utter lack of presence in the office of the most powerful and dangerous potentially man on the planet? And yet he's saying F you to people who don't support him? Really?
Well, no, he's saying F you to people who can't handle the truth that this is the best version of Biden ever. And first of all, I mean, I would say if this is the best version of Biden, God help us with what he used to be. Like, and here's the thing. I think Ann Coulter was the one who said it. She actually preferred it when Obama golfed because then he was doing less to destroy the country. and I would say Joe Biden, cognitively unaware, he personally is doing less damage than he would if he were with it. But the problem is Joe Biden not being with it means the people around him do all the damage. And it's in his name. And it's horrible. But Joe Scarborough's argument was that Joe Biden used to be a hothead. And that's why he's better now, because he's more reserved. He's more reserved because he doesn't know what day it is.
You are right.
He's afraid to open his mouth because he might say something about Taiwan that the administration has to spend a week walking back.
You're right, and of course he melts down the next day on the campaign trail. Well, we're going to continue these discussions, I know, in the coming weeks, Virginia, and appreciate your analysis. I'm going to see if I can maybe we'll play some more some tone down Katie Britt, because her stock price rose in my book. We'll see what's going on there.
Her whole response wasn't bad. It was definitely, she hit the points and she hit them hard. But I think that there was a little bit of it felt performative. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. I don't disagree. But a little positive, hopeful city on the shining hill is needed, no doubt about it. Hey, thanks, Virginia. We got to run. Appreciate everything you do.
All right, you too.
All right, there she is. Yeah, I want to hear that city on a shining hill. I want to hear it's a rendezvous with destiny. I want to hear hope, a thousand lights. I want to hear some positive news. And at the same time, straightforward, absolute indictment of the disaster that Joe Biden and his administration have wreaked on this country. Coming up, Phil Kirpin is going to join us, and we're going to tear down and tear up the State of the Union speech with him. He's from AmericanCommitment.org. And then later, Rachel Ehrenfeld to explain some of the foreign policy initiatives in the State of the Union, including that Gaza Strip pier that we're going to build. Stay tuned for more on The Randy Tober Show.